Hello, my name is Paul Burgess. I'm the one behind these videos and I do it in my spare time. I'm a 77-year-old granddad with 10 grandchildren and I try to do it to help improve the world, maybe for them. And recently I read a paper which was published in 2017. I wasn't aware of it until now. And it excited me because it used the same techniques I used in my mathematical model way back in 1970-71. So what I thought I'd do here is explain a rough pilgrim's progress, if you like, of my path from then till today. And so I started work in Cornwall River Authority in charge of all this, of the data and so on, and planning, but I had to come up with a model for river flows. So I took over 100 years of river flows and analysed them. And what you do is you take out the waves, imagine harmonics within river flows. Well, the biggest harmonic is actually the seasons, obviously, more in the winter and spring and so on. So the process is this. You find the biggest cycle in the data, and then you remove that cycle from the data to get a remainder. And you check to see if the remainder is random. Are there any cycles left? And if there are cycles left, you think, and it's not random, you go to the start and try to remove the next cycle. But once what's remaining is random, then you model the random nature, add it to your cycles, and you've now got the statistical model of your data. I did find, of course, that in that work there was an 11-year sun cycle, because by measuring the river flow, you're measuring the rainfall, you're measuring the cloud cover, which again affects lots of things. In fact, cloud cover is supremely important with climate change. And so I found the 11-year sun cycle within the data, and that really was exciting for me. And now, after that, I became water resources engineer for Gwynedd. Gwynedd River Authority in North Wales, where the pump storage scheme to Norwich was built, biggest in Europe at the time. So my job there was as a supervisory thing for the water resources element of that. And it was a fascinating construction. And I really have only respect for the people who did it, who have the highest quality, that's all I can say. So I had experience firsthand as it was being built inside the mountain, the whole lot of that scheme. Then I ended up after that becoming the equivalent post for the whole of Wales, where I sat on government water resource committee, and they were doing a project that they said was going to be maybe feasible. Let's look into this. Let's employ experts and do this. And they went saying it would take 2 or 3 years to do. I actually went away. I got so fed up. I just went away and we wrote the system in 10 weeks, which we ended up sending to the rest of the UK by the government, and ended up, I even got accused, by the way, of making a profit, which I shouldn't have done, for the Welsh Water Authority at the time, which was called the Welsh National Water Development Authority. So I've been involved at all different levels in this. And one of the things I very quickly became aware of in that world was there wasn't any corruption of normal, what you think of as corruption, but there was a tremendous moral corruption. And I'm going to give it by example. I was also in Wales, not just water resources planning and that, but I was also a person responsible for all data, any technical data of any sort, sewage, the lot, coming into the Water Authority. And I was asked by the Anti-Coastal Pollution League, and they sent me a map with these raw sewage outlets into the sea. Are these all raw sewage outlets? And my answer was, yes, they are, but we've got more than that. Here they are. And when I gave the information on the belief that I was a public servant and not my job to hide stuff, and by hiding stuff, you never cure it. You've got to examine the problem and then deal with it. I was actually criticised. I was just below director level, and I was criticised by the director for doing, being so silly and naive as to give information away. Well, hold here. That's what the corruption was. The corruption was authorities and public authorities everywhere, in my view, look after themselves before they look after you, the consumer, you, the public. I became so fed up with this, and I had a lot of maverick things I did, all of which were successful. Then in the end, I left that industry and became for my own business. So that's where I come from. And in all of that, what I've always been really keen on is anti-pollution measures. And pollution and the environment that way is totally distinct from climate change. And people confuse the two. You shouldn't. So here I am doing this intro, a little Pilgrim's Progress of my life on what interested me. And it's summed up, really. It's all it is a search for the truth. And so I'm now going to show you this paper and tell you, as I show it to you, what excites me about it. This work is based on the reconstruction of 2,000 years of temperature records. But before I go into that detail, we need to examine how this data came about and why the alarmist version of it is wrong. The entire basis of the alarmist's alarm is based around Dr. Mann's hockey stick from 1998. And here it is. I have done a separate video on this called The Layman's Guide to the Hockey Stick, showing you how it is so, so wrong. The link to that video is in the description to this video. What it shows is a fairly constant cooling until we came along with the Industrial Revolution. It is, of course, absurd because what you would have here is continuing to cool and cool and cool. In other words, to continue to reduce and reduce plant food and make the earth cooler and cooler. But that is the basis of the alarmism. This graph shows the average of 18 non-tree ring proxy temperatures from 12 locations around the Northern Hemisphere. It clearly shows that the natural climate variability happens and that these proxies coincide with known events in human history. And that's very important to verify the data, verify your work. And it's called history. The grey data here behind these cycles is the annual temperatures going back 2,000 years. Out of that data, the Fourier series analysis that I've explained has lifted three main cycles, the black, the blue, and the green. On this scale, we are ignoring a lot of small cycles, such as the 11-year sunspot cycle. So discounting the smaller cycles, the three big cycles are 1,033 years, 463 years, and every 190 years. And of course, these cycles occur at different times, so you can have a minimum of one occurring with a maximum of another and so on. So let's now look back over the last 2,000 years of history that we know about. So taking these three cycles and putting them into the data, they form the red line in the top graph. And the blue line is the 31-year moving average of those historic temperatures to try to smooth them out a little bit. And of course, this shows that the model built on those three cycles is pretty good. In fact, it's very near to the historic temperatures. Here where I've circled, the three cycles coincide with peaks. And also note this about 1,000 years later. The three cycles coincide with peaks. And another 1,000 years later in the current time, the three cycles coincide with peaks. So let's look further into this. And we will start right back 2,000 years ago, when it was the Roman warm period. And in that period, all the three cycles combined. And then 1,000 years later, there was a medieval warm period. And there we are again. All the three cycles combined to peak. And then 1,000 years after that, what we're in now, the current time, is the current warm period, totally down to these cycles combining, not CO2. Now, let us take a look at this very cold point here. It's simply out of sync with our model, well below what the model's predicting. Why? Well, first of all, we know it's true, because Louis XI of France actually recorded in his biography how cold it was. It was exceptional. The reason was probably a volcano. It is expected at that time there was a massive volcano, and a volcano can put a lot of particles into the atmosphere and reflect the sunlight back, therefore cooling the earth, although it only does it for a year or two. So the data is even supported by historical events such as that, and there are many such events. And of course, what causes all this natural variability in climate is the sun. Now, from this paper and other papers, it is clear that mankind has had very little to do with these changes in climate. It is natural. Now, there is confirmation for the link between solar activity and climate cycles by wavelet analysis, showing a remarkably good agreement of the power of the 190-year period for temperatures and solar over 9,000 years. So separate papers have gone back 9,000 years and shown the 190-year cycle. But the periods of 1,000 and 460 years are also fairly common in records of temperatures and cosmogenic nuclides. I'm not going to go into that now. All you need to know is, basically, there's a lot of evidence showing it's the sun affecting all this natural climate change. And don't forget, we know it is natural because it was before mankind and the Industrial Revolution started pumping the CO2 into the air. As we'll now be looking into the short-term future, smaller cycles come into play. And this is one of them. It's 65 years. And it adds and subtracts temperature, as in the graph. As regards predicting the future, the model developed here is not like normal climate models. It's based on cycles. Well, it's a bit like being hit on the head by someone every 10 minutes for a week, and you're asked then, what's coming in the next 10 minutes? You can be fairly certain. Hence, we can be fairly certain of the coming climate by just looking at the continuing cycle. So now understanding the past and having a model for it, we can easily look forward. And what I'm going to do here is just look forward to the next 50 or 60 years or so. But in doing this on that timescale, the smaller cycles come into play, such as the 65-year cycle already mentioned. So we're going to look forward now, and this is the graph. Well, looking at the cycles here, the 190-year cycle is going to be cooling us down here. That is, of course, after it's done its job of warming us from the little ice age here. But on top of that, we've got a smaller cycle of 65 years, and that one's going to cool it even further, down to 2035, when we'll get the coldest point before it starts to recover. Incidentally, and quite independently, Professor Valentina Sarkova came to the same conclusion about 2035 in quite independent research. It's featured in my video, History Matters with Climate Alarmism, The Little Ice Age. And that 65-year cycle will go on to warm over the top here, but never getting back to how warm it is today, so we face a cooler future from here on in. Past the year 2100, heading for almost the Little Ice Age. So what is coming is the exact opposite of what you're being told. You're being told it's going to get hotter and hotter. In practice, it's going to get colder and colder. But what about CO2, I hear the cry. After all, the world is burning more coal now than ever in its history. Even Germany, possibly the greenest country in Europe, has increased its coal production enormously. The world is producing more CO2 than ever in its history. So will that save us? Will that warm and compensate for the cooling? The simple answer is no. It'll make a very small difference because CO2 has less and less effect the more it is added. Slowly, reality is dawning on the alarmists because the data is forcing a decline in the effect of CO2 on temperature. Let me explain. Temperature sensitivity, or the sensitivity to CO2, is the measure of what the effect would be, the temperature rise would be, from doubling CO2. Now look at the graph here. In the early 2000s, they were saying you get between 3 and 5 degrees centigrade increase in temperature if you double CO2. By 2005, it had dropped to between 2.8 and 3.8 centigrade for a doubling of CO2. Then by 2012, it was down to between 1.8 and 2.8 degrees centigrade for a doubling of CO2. But in more recent times, it's down to between 0.1 of a degree centigrade or 0.8 of a degree centigrade. So the claims have been diminishing, that CO2 gradually has less and less effect, according to the alarmists. Warming since 1870 or so, attributed to CO2, is in reality caused by the approximate 196-year cycle. Sometimes people call it the 200-year cycle, the 205-year cycle. That's a sort of accuracy of determination of the cycle. Present variations in cooling and warming from 1970 to 1997 is due to the 65-year period Pacific Decadal Oscillation and the Atlantic Multi-Decadal Oscillation. All change accounted for by the cycles. No trace of warming by CO2. All change is natural. Well, that's what you would conclude from the work so far. The cycles have accounted for pretty well everything. I do believe that CO2 has helped warm the planet a bit, but I think its effect is marginal. But in any way, going forward, its effect is truly marginal. First of all, I'd like to thank you for watching the video, especially those of you who made it this far. I try my best to link science to the common man, as it were. That's what I try to do. I try to simplify it as far as I can. And I know I have to smooth some curves in doing that. I could go into much more detail on almost every subject. So I hope at least I'm bringing the science to the people. As regards the future, yes, I do think we're heading into this cooling period. I think we've actually started it. And I do think that CO2 is going to increase enormously, but I don't know whether it'll compensate enough. It won't certainly warm the planet much. What it might do is compensate for the poorer crops from a colder climate. I don't know the answer to that. It is plant food, and we're pushing in much, much more of it than ever before. It's amazing, you know, all the governments doing all this work, spending trillions of dollars, and achieving nothing but accelerating the very thing they're trying to reduce. Governments are incompetent, and these days they've chosen to manage science and all sorts of things. All aspects of transport and everything are now in the hands of government. They're trying to restrict your movement, they're trying to do away with your car, they're costing you a fortune in heat because of terrible energy policies. And I feel as if I don't stand much of a chance fighting all this. But it does make me feel better trying to kick the elephant, as it were. And that's all I'm trying to do. So once again, I won't ramble on anymore. Thanks for watching.